Life can be complicated, especially with all the new challenges we face today and the uncertainty of tomorrow. One thing you shouldn't have to worry about is your auto, home, or business insurance. That's why Hub New England makes it simple. The best coverage for the best price. As the largest insurance broker in Massachusetts, Hub New England works with Safety Insurance and makes it simple to provide the best protection by evaluating your needs and then matching you with the right coverage. Hub New England. Ready for tomorrow. Learn more at hubinternational.com.
B-Pod Studios.
And now, I'm just trying to spell it out for the listeners.
Felger and Mav.
S-T-O-O-P-I-D.
T-E-P-I-D.
B-O-B.
Boob.
Isn't that Bob?
Felger and Mav.
Q-U-I-T quit.
Okay, thank you. No, spell out for me too. I'm an idiot.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Right, hi there, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati coming to you on Tuesday, January 5th. Tuesday, Maz. What does that make that?
Big Boy Tuesday.
He's on the large side. That's why we call him the Big Boy. Greg Bedard from the Boston Sports Journal joining us for his regular Tuesday stint. He'll be joining us throughout the postseason. So while the Celtics are done, we are not. With the big fellow from Boston Sports Journal, we got Maz and Murray in our Town Fair Tire Studios. I'm in the remote A-hole chair location. Greg also coming to you from Yo Couch. Greg, how you doing? Happy New Year.
Good, you?
Peachy, thank you. Greg, how do you feel about your football team today?
Not great. No. Look, they beat up a Jets team that was playing a lot of soft zone. They had a little bit of fun. That was good to see. I do think there is something to be said about the way the Patriots played this game as opposed to some of, you know, other NFL teams, Eagles. But no, I don't think they're in good shape at the moment, but there's a lot of work to be done in this offseason. And I'll tell you from talking to people the past couple days around the team, and I sort of wrote this because, you know, we've heard what Bill has said over the course of basically since the first Bills loss. That's when Bill's been in excuse making mode. You know, after the finale and on Monday, I was worried about, you know, half truths or not close to the truth. And I worried that what Bill is saying publicly, maybe he's carrying that forward privately. In terms of how he views this team, maybe he's gotten to the age where he thinks he can do no wrong, and that they're just a couple plays away from doing this or that, or they just need good quarterback play and they'll be okay. After talking to some people the past few days, it sounds like Bill knows exactly what's going on, in that I think they are going to set an aggressive path towards this offseason, and that means in a whole bunch of different areas, from free agency to trades to the offense to the draft. I think he spent a good part of the second half of the season realizing where his team was, and I think he's ready to do something about it.
So, Greg, are you telling me that he is doing a decent job of self-scouting himself?
It sounds like it, yeah. I mean, from the discussions that I've had, I think that Bill is coming to the realizations that he can't continue to do what he has done on offense the past few years, which is part of the reason, you know, his whole, oh, well, we sold out for 2014 through 2018. Oh, let me include 2019. Well, you know, I'm pretty sure if you asked the former quarterback if he thought that Bill Belichick was selling out on offense for him, I think you would get a big fat no, which is exactly why he's in Tampa and no longer here. I think that Belichick realizes maybe it's because of the Bills and what he's seen them do, what they've done, how they've come along and brought Josh Allen along by investing in the offense. And also maybe it's some of the stuff that maybe he's heard Nick Saban talking about, that you can no longer win in college football with good defense, that you need to play good offense. And I think that he's ready to right those wrongs on offense. But also, I think I think he's more reality based when it comes to what he's done in the draft, and I think he's open to changing. I don't know exactly. I don't have specifics, but I think that he is open to changing his approach and what he's done.
Sounds to me like the coach figured out that the quarterback he chased off actually fixed a lot of holes there in recent years.
It's quite possible, Jim. Yeah.
So, is there something to the overall approach, Greg? It's sort of an obvious question, but they need to get faster. They need to get bigger. They need to get better on the outside. They need to get better on the inside. They need, you know, is there a specific direction there? And, Maz, what are you laughing at?
Oh, no, because I can answer that for you. Yeah.
All of the above?
They need talent is what they need. It's called talent. That's what they need. They need talent because they have none or very little of it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Greg.
Well, I mean, it's sort of obvious, though. I mean, but is there, do you think there's a direction of the game that he thinks that he needs to go in? Or, you know, there was a time that he loaded up, he just kept drafting tight end after tight end after tight end and finally hit on Gronkowski and Hernandez. And, he sort of saw a direction in the game, and those matchup misadvantages and all of that. Is there something like that going forward you think that he's identified?
Well, I mean, I definitely think that he knows he needs a wide receiver. He knows he needs a tight end. But I think in general, though, I think Belichick has come to the realization that he lost his way in terms of he started maybe it was because what he had on the roster, but he lost his way in terms of and give credit to Albert Breer because he wrote about some of this last week where. Because other scouts or other personnel executives were making this point about the Patriots, and I think it's true, and I think Belichick has realized it. He lost his way in terms of looking for too many specifics in terms of roles for players in the draft. And let's just use Juwan Williams as a prime example. This is a guy that he drafted in the second round to basically, all right, well, we're playing a bunch of tight ends this year. He gives us matchup options. Well, yeah, but is he a good football player? Like, if he's not, you know, covering a tight end in that game, can you put him at cornerback? The answer to this point is no. Can you put him at safety? The answer at this point is no. So what exactly are you getting out of that guy? And so there have been too many Juwan Williams on this team, and Belichick needs to get back to, you know what? I'm just going to get a damn good football player who can play on all three downs because, you know, if you really think about it, the beginning of this dynasty started with a bunch of guys who kicked some ass who never wanted to come off the field. And he didn't have to worry about dividing every single role into specifics and trying to piece it together. You just had good football players and you went out there and kicked the ass of the other team. And that has not happened in years around. He realizes he needs to right that wrong.
How about aggressiveness in terms of, so he has to draft better. Again, another sort of obvious statement. Aggressiveness in terms of free agents. And, you know, again, tying into his excuse making this week, he says it's hard to be more aggressive than we've been since 2014. First of all, do you agree or disagree with that? And what do you expect this offseason? And let me just, as part of my question, let me just say, I think a lot of people are confusing activity with aggressiveness. In other words, I think the Pats have been very active. You know, they're very, very active as a personnel team. Like at the draft, Maz, for example. They're very active.
Oh, yeah.
Trade this for that. Trade up down here. Trade down here. I'll take a third for a second next year. And then trade that at 2 fours. And then trade that up in the third. And by the next, you got 18 different moves. Are they aggressive, though?
No.
Like, so they're active. Like, they've made a bunch of signings. And they made a bunch of trades. And a bunch of things at the draft. But I think there's a difference between being active and being aggressive. So I wholly disagree with the fact that they've been quote unquote aggressive. 90% of the moves are they're getting someone at some sort of discount. Even the big ticket items that people give them credit for, like Darrell Revis, he was a depressed asset.
Correct.
At the time. Michael Bennett was a depressed asset by the time he came here last year. Randy Moss was almost, you know, written off in a lot of quarters in the league when he came here. So those weren't aggressive moves. It was just part of their broad, you know, throwing out a big net and seeing what stick. They've been very rarely have they been aggressive. And so that's just my little mini rant on that. But, Greg, your thoughts on that whole piece?
No, but I completely agree with you that, you know, when you typically say aggressive when it turns to, you know, building a roster, it's all right, I'm going to go out there and be aggressive to get the best guy available or somebody that is going to fit us to a T. That's not what the Patriots are doing. You have to look at, all right, well, why were they? First of all, they were just active. They weren't being aggressive. I think you're correct on that. And the question you have to ask is, why did they have to be active? And it's because they had to fill spot after spot on this roster to cover up the poor drafting in recent years. And so that's what it's been about. And what happens? That becomes expensive. All of a sudden you're up against the cap starting in 2018. And all of a sudden you get to this. It wasn't just, oh, well, we sold out on a couple guys. Yeah, I'm sure there are people out there who say, well, they sold out to get Antonio Brown and Mohamed Sanu. Okay, well, first of all, why didn't they have talent to start the year? Actually bring in guys in training camp with talent, not Demaryius Thomas and Dontrell Inman and Maurice Harris, where guys could actually learn the scheme and, I don't know, practice and get ready to not just slap things together and rush into things and not investigate players' backgrounds and whether they can actually, you know, run anymore in Sanu's case. So I think you're exactly right. They've been more active than anything, but the question is why? And it's because they've had so many holes to fill because they had not drafted well.
Look, Mike, I think in some ways what you're saying and what Greg was saying earlier about how they were so specific in the draft, they almost go hand in hand, because being aggressive entails going after a big fish. Go get the big fish. Now, look, they have so many freaking needs right now. They can't possibly do that in every spot. But I do think that there are a couple spots where they need to be aggressive. They have to go get someone good. Like, to me, just to throw a name out there, Godwin with Tampa Bay. Go get that guy. He's a football player, and he can fit in any offense.
So, you know, just again, Stephon Gilmore was aggressive. Day one of free agency.
Yes.
Had to outbid the rest of the league, got in front of the line, and got a premium guy. That's aggressive. Darrell Revis was... Oh, because they needed it because they hadn't drafted and they didn't want to pay Malcolm Butler. And there was, of course, there's a whole backstory there. It wasn't just Stephon Gilmore in a vacuum. I'm just saying, let's see aggressive versus active is how I would parse that out. We just thrown up the graphic there on NBC Sports Boston about the quarterback. You know, obviously that's got to be number one on your list, their list, everyone's list. How do you think they do it, Greg? Do you think they go find the best quarterback available and then sort of build around him? Or do they go find a guy that plays it the way they want it played? Pre-snap reads, maybe more of a pocket passer than a runner, someone that's more efficient than big play. I think we sort of know the Patriot type after Brady and certainly, maybe even Garoppolo a little. Do you think they try and find their guy or rebuild everything around just what happens to be the best quarterback available to them?
I think the latter. I think this year taught them reinforced that, they need a specific guy, and he doesn't have to be, a top draft pick or a top free agent or top trade. They just need a guy who is accurate, can understand the scheme in totality and how it's built and the reason why plays are called and why certain routes are run and how that relates to the defense and how guys are going to get open and how the quarterback can make them open. All of those things, which never happened with Cam Newton. It just never happened. And I think they need that type of guy. I mean, if you look back on Belichick's career, going back to Cleveland, and I'll admit, it's hard to tell because of Brady, because he was there and they didn't have to do a lot of things. We don't know what he would have done. But, like a Matt Castle type, or, in Cleveland, Vinny Testaverde, those type of guys. I think the Patriots think that they can be good enough at quarterback as long as they build up everything else around it. I think that's, instead of being quarterback dependent, I think they're going to be more talent dependent.
So find the best system guy they can find.
Yeah.
Which I have no problem with.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay with that too. I don't want it to be some hack.
No, but to me, if you're going to keep Bill, and you are going to keep Bill, and this is a choice you've made, then give him the guy that he's most comfortable with. And, build around. Even though we're all down on Belichick right now and we're criticizing the crap out of him and he deserves it, this is still the path you've chosen. You've got to put him in the best, So I think stick with your system and find a guy that fits your system best and not that other way. So, the Trey Lance kid, forget about that. That's just not – he's the big athlete. He's the North Dakota State big athletic guy, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so yep. You know, forget about that. I got no use for that. So that's that question. Final question, Greg. Do you think Belichick's salary is a factor in all of this? You know, we're hearing Mike Florio saying between 20 and 25 million annually for Bill Belichick. Does that, and maybe even add in Josh's salary, who I think is maybe the highest paid offensive coordinator in the league or close to it, do the coaching salaries on this team factor into the whole build and the way they spend and all of that?
I think they do. Now, no one has told me this, but knowing in general how the Crafts operate and how the Patriots, you know, basically they've been close to a cash to cap team means that their budget is basically what the cap is that year. That's what you get. And if you look at some of the shortfalls that they've had, if you factor in, say, 20 plus million for Belichick and probably another, what, you know, 10 for the rest of the staff, you know, you add that up, it's probably pretty close to the cap every year. So to me, that's significant. And also, if you look at, you go to Spotrac and you look at Tom Brady's career earnings, or at least what he made every year, it's always been under a certain threshold. I mean, really, it was about $15 million or less for a long time. It boosted the last couple of years. And it just makes you wonder if Bill Belichick, you know, was more well paid than Brady during all that time, and whether he had a clause in his contract to make sure he was paid more than anybody else on the team.
Maz, don't you love that? So, you know, these salary sites have your year by year earnings, which is meaning the real cash you make,
right,
including it, you know, it includes whatever bonus payments you got in that given year, whatever incentives you got in that given year, what your base salary is in that given year. And when you look at Tom Brady, let's just start in 2005. Okay. In 2004, Tom Brady made $6 million in real money. In 2003, he made nine. And again, this is based on when the bonuses were paid out, but let's just start there in 2005 then. And you tell me, do you think Bill Belichick made less than this amount in any given year starting in 2005?
Okay, go. Okay.
Brady's year-by-year earnings, 2005, 12, 14, 12.5, 8, 8, 16.5. Then in 2011, he spiked to 19.7. Okay, maybe that year, maybe 2011 when Brady made 19.7 because a bonus kicked in, he might have made more than Bill. But 2012, he goes back to 12. 13, 19, I'm just giving you again the year by year, 13, 14, 15, 15, then the last year here he made 23. If Bill's between 20 and 25, and Brady's last year here he made 23, is there any coincidence in these numbers that I'm giving you?
No, and as Greg said it, I went, well, there you go, because again, Bill was always into Bill being in charge, Bill being the most, you know, important person there, everyone was going to bow to Bill. So I think it totally makes sense. Now, look, some of those years, I think that Brady was higher. I don't think Bill's been making 25 for 15 years. But I wonder if he's been making it in the last 5, 10. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where you draw the line. And I told you, I have my own theory as to what might have led to the most recent spike.
And you think it's going back to Garoppolo, of course. But the whole thing is, I would not be surprised one bit. And if I had to guess, somewhere in the Palace queue, and the Brady Belichick thing and the little tug of war and all of that, money was in there somewhere. It was in there somewhere. What's he making? What am I making? You mean he's making that and you won't give me this? Well, if he's making this and I'm making that, if I'm the guy that's most important, why am I making this and he making that? That's human nature. It would not stun me one bit if this were part of the story, Greg.
Yeah, and Mike, I actually have another tidbit on that, but I don't know if you want to do it after.
Okay, Greg's tidbit. On this, because I am up against it. I went late. We want your thoughts, too. 617-779-0985. To you right after this.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Life can be complicated, especially with all the new challenges we face today and the uncertainty of tomorrow. One thing you shouldn't have to worry about is your auto, home, or business insurance. That's why Hub New England makes it simple. The best coverage for the best price. As the largest insurance broker in Massachusetts, Hub New England works with Safety Insurance and makes it simple to provide the best protection by evaluating your needs and then matching you with the right coverage. Hub New England. Ready for tomorrow. Learn more at hubinternational.com.
Getting you through the afternoon, one team.
take at a time.
Oh, my gosh. It was unbelievable.
It's Felger and Mass.
So why don't you just do that? Just do that then.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub and now the radio.com app.
How much of this will they tolerate? How many years of this will they tolerate? Because they could be looking at 2, 3, 4, 5 years of this.
I would think that up there in New England, you know, after maybe if it gets next year, it looks like this, they're going to get antsy up there. I don't know if that puts, like, you know, Bill or anybody on the hot seat quite yet. But I think a next year of, like, one more year of mediocrity like we saw this year, yeah. I think you're going to start to hear New England fans, you know, murmur and start getting a little, you know, antsy that way. I mean, I'm a little surprised by the way they've acted this year anyways. You know, the way they treat Bill Belichick on the local radio stations, I want to be like, whoa, I wouldn't talk to anybody that way, let alone, like, the greatest coach I've ever seen. I'm shocked by it.
Mike Florio and Chris Sims, yeah, that's what makes us the best. When we're at our best, no sacred cows. Bill is a bad year, we say it, right? I say Bloomington, Indiana, and Bobby Knight. Anyway, before I get to the phones, quickly, Greg, your follow-up on Bill Belichick and his salary.
So I'm a big fan of Mike Lombardi, the former, I mean, he's been with Belichick in a lot of places, including here. He's got a great podcast. He's a friend. You know, we talk from time to time. And, you know, I listen to his podcast all the time. And one of the things he consistently brings up, and I've never heard another NFL sort of insider talk about it as much as he does, is he constantly talks about, especially when it comes to quarterbacks, that why teams are paying their quarterbacks more than their coaches. Like, he consistently talks about how Jared Goff makes $30 million. And he says, you know, what? Like, I would, he's like, if I were them, I would pay Sean McVay $30 million. And because he's the system, he makes it work. Without him, Jared Goff does not work. And just the amount of times he says it, and now, you know, what we've been talking about and sort of, and with Belichick's salary, it just makes me think, I wonder if he's heard that someplace before. Huh. And somebody talking about how coaches should be paid more than quarterbacks. I just found it interesting.
Look, I think in some cases they should. I think that Goff example is a great example. I think that offense is McVay more than the quarterback. And I felt that was here too. 11-5 with Matt Castle, 3-1 with Garoppolo and Jacoby Brissett. Okay, pay the coach as much as the quarterback. Fine. Like, I think you could build a case there. 7-9. And what you've seen this year? No. Someone's due for a pay cut, I would say, if this keeps up. All right, as promised, your calls here with Greg Bedard, the big boy. We've got John and Lowell. Lead us off today. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the points that big boy is talking about. The salary. The head coach is the boss, and he should get the most money. In private industry, that's the way it is. And also, another point I'd like to make.
John, I'm just going to stop you. It ain't private industry. So stop. And in no other sport would this even be a conversation.
Correct.
I think there's in some rare cases in the sport of football, the coach, you know, would deserve to be in the conversation. Heretofore, I thought Bill was there. After 7-9, I'm going to take a step back from that. But I don't know. You tell me, in Chicago, how does Nagy keep, you know, having winning records and going to the playoffs with the bums that he's trotted out at quarterback? And, you know, maybe that's not the best example. McVay's the best example. I mean, are you paying him or are you paying the quarterback?
Right. Well, I will say, you know, I think John has a valid point in that I think the crafts view it that way in terms of industry. And I also point you at, look at what the NFL pays Roger Goodell. Like,
wow.
He makes like $50 million a year. What? It's like the NFL couldn't run itself without Roger Goodell. Right. Like, I mean, I just think that the crafts view this business like a lot of their other businesses. And when you have a chief executive who is as good at their job as Bill Belichick is and who is so much better than anybody else, then I bet they're like, okay, yeah, we're on board with that. I think that they're fine with it. But I also think they might build it into the budget.
Yeah, the problem is that Bill is the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. And so if you try to look for the next Bill Belichick, good luck. That one's going to take a while. It took us forever to get to this one.
Bill in Fall River, hi.
Hi. I was wanting to talk about the quarterback situation, and I really believe that they need a young quarterback. I think they should go out and look for the next Tom Brady.
Okay, Bill, I'm going to let you go. How does the salary thing, Greg, play into the quarterback thing now? Because if the quarterback's going to make less than the coach, does that mean Matthew Stafford's off the table? I know Stafford makes in the low 20s, so maybe that does work. But do you think – I mean, does that play in?
I mean, possibly, but I do – like you said, I do think it's close enough on – you know, whether it's Stafford or Garoppolo or somebody like that, I think it's close enough that he might be okay with it. And plus, they're a lot younger, so I think it might be kosher, but I'm not sure.
I'll tell you though, it does, Mike. As you bring that up, it makes me completely rethink, and I say rethink, get me even angrier about how they handled the quarterback position this past year. They waited for the cheapest option that was left over on the discount table. Why? Because Bill was cashing his checks for $25 million? So that's why they didn't pay a quarterback?
Part of it.
I mean, that's a joke. If that's what it is, that's a joke.
I mean, I think that transcends to the roster. And they've spent the least amount of money on players in the NFL since 2016. And they paid the most at the coaching position. Does anyone think that's not related? Like, I mean, come on. Of course it's related. It's real money. Everyone has a budget. Every business has a budget. Why the Pats are immune to having a budget to what they spend? They've spent the least amount of money on players in the NFL since 2016. They've paid the most for their head coach since 2016. Do you not see some correlation, folks? And why would that cease to exist? What, you know, why would that change now? So continue to factor that in. And we would do this to any other player, so let's do it to Bill. Is he worth the money? Let's just be fair about that. Is he worth the money? We'll pick it up after we do. Three up, three down. Final season edition with the big boy after Big Jim Murray's update here.
This Sports Hub on-demand content is brought to you by Cape Cod Cafe Pizza. Perfect for dinner, whether you cook it in the oven or on the grill. So next time you're out, grab a few Cape Cod Cafe pizzas. They're available at your local grocery's frozen food section, or just order them online at CapeCodCafePizza.com. Have it shipped directly to you to enjoy.
Now, it's time for Three Up.
Dives to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots.
Nice call.
And three down.
I don't even understand the call. You're trying to go vertical on third and four. I'd rather run him on a slant with his size.
With Greg Bedard of BostonSportsJournal.com. Three up.
And the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
Three down.
He sucks.
He blows.
Here on Felger and Mez.
All right, three up, three down, brought to you by Massachusetts General Hospital. Mass General reminds you, don't delay important preventative screenings or follow-up care during COVID-19. For more information on in-person and virtual appointments, visit massgeneral.org. This is a season edition. So the three stars, the three duds, the three best players, the three worst, and then we'll do some other season awards in this segment. So let's rifle through them. Greg, who's your number one stud, number one up for the Patriots this year?
By the way, I'm going to preempt Tony here and just say it's ridiculous that he or even Zolak or anybody else mentions Jake Bailey as the best player on this team. It's a bunch of bull crap, and I'll tell you why. Because number one is Joe Tooney. He is a tremendous player. He's going to get paid. He gave up, I think, 17 pressures all season, plays all the time. He's a great football player.
Mass.
Jake Bailey. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Bedard. He was the only, he was the one consistent guy beginning to end. It was the punter, and it's an indictment. It's an indictment on the team that the punter is the best player.
Number two, Greg.
Wrong. You're wrong. Shaq Mason, the other great guard on this team, really rebounded this year from a subpar season last year. Was tremendous, was back in the Pro Bowl, all-pro consideration, and actually, you know, plays every down instead of the punter who gets to play like six times a game. So, again, another player who's a lot better than Jake Bailey.
To me, Jacoby Myers. I thought Myers was maybe the only, you know, non-running back on offense that I could look at and have respect for. So it, to me, you know, all things considered, there's a guy who hit his ceiling, probably went above it in this season, and there aren't many guys you can say that about on this team.
Okay, third star. Greg's first two were offensive guards. Why do I get the sense we're going to have a defensive tackle here? Go ahead. Who's your third star?
Oh, yeah.
Lawrence Guy.
Lawrence Guy.
You knew it.
It's just,
he's, man, if they did not have him this season, like they did last week when they were god awful against the run, or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, he's just, he's another great football player who has been one of the best. You know, we talked about Belichick's miscues. He was a knocked out of the park free agent signing from the Ravens. Nobody really floated under the radar. That whoever it was on the Patriots, whether it was Belichick or somebody else, plucked him out. He has been a tremendous Patriot the entire time. And of course, I hope he's back, but we'll have to see.
See, I try to look for guys who exceeded expectations. So I went with a winner. I thought he was good. He gave him a good year. And again, that's a low-paid guy. They don't have enough guys like that on the team. That's why I picked Myers. That's why I picked Bailey. But I will throw one more at you just for the sake of it. J.C. Jackson. Good year. Okay. Not a great year, but a good year.
Number one dud.
John Simon. I mean, he plays a lot. I mean,
he
other guys
blows.
But he is... If you're looking for a poster child about what's wrong with Belichick and his roster building and how he constructed this roster, is that he came into the season and said a journeyman like John Simon, just because he can set the edge and defend the run, we have to have that guy. It just shows you where things are going.
You can't draft better than John Simon.
Right.
Seriously.
Like, oh, my God. Okay, no, Matt, as your number one.
Okay, just quickly, I look at it as who was the single most disappointing player on the team. And I say N'Keal Harry. You had to get something out of that guy this year. Something, some glimmer of hope, some light. There was none. He's my number one.
Two, Greg.
Juwan Bentley. He had probably the best opportunity of anyone on this roster this year. He's been here. He knows the scheme. Knew there was going to be an opt-out. Flashed as a rookie, got hurt, wasn't good last year, came back. All right, this year, all right, 1 year away from the injury. Here we go. Just nothing. Just revealed that he is a backup at best here, and him not performing at middle linebacker killed this defense.
Tight end, right in, whoever you want. In fact, take the best parts of all three of those guys, and the player still sucks. Their tight ends are horrendous.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I had Ryan Izzo, but you could just lump them all in there. They're all together. It's not fair to Ryan Izzo. He's not a starter. Had to be put out there because the other guys were so terrible. So just group them all together. The tight ends were just god-awful.
Number three for me, and not for lack of effort, you got to put him on the list, is Cam Newton.
Thank you.
We're going to leave Cam Newton off the list?
Thank you.
I mean, he was horrible. Again, he tried. I'm not saying he didn't, but he was awful.
No, Cam Newton was awful. He belongs on that list. Three down. What was the best? Yeah, let's just do some other season-ending awards here. What was their best win?
Ravens, no doubt. It's their only victory against a playoff team.
Yeah, Baltimore. You know, I would include the Chargers, though, just because I think that they played a complete game that day. But Baltimore's the one.
Oh, Chargers didn't even show up for that game.
What was their worst loss?
The Texans, the one that completely crushed the path. Because in hindsight, Michael, the Patriots were eliminated after their Week 11 loss at Houston to the god-awful, helpless Texans, where the Patriots didn't even show up to play defense in that game.
Yeah.
And because that left them at 4-6 and 11-5 made the playoffs in the
AFC. It turns out not only 9-7 wouldn't have gotten them in, at 10-6 was no, they needed help at 10-6.
Correct. They wouldn't have gotten in at 10-6.
The path got crushed.
What was the worst loss, Mess?
To me, Denver.
Yeah.
Please. Denver was the worst. That was horrendous.
At home, Jimmy, given the spot, you had home field. I know there's no fans, but at least Houston has a real quarterback. That one's inexcusable to the Broncos.
Okay, what was their best play of the season?
Myers' first touchdown pass to Rex Burkhead. It was right before halftime. They were trailing the Ravens 10-7. Who knew if they were ever going to score a touchdown? And, you know, not only did they make the play, but Myers makes a perfect pass against actually pretty good coverage. Burkhead runs a great route, fights through coverage, makes a diving catch. That play was just spectacular from start to finish.
I had the same play.
Okay, what was their worst play of the year? Lot to choose from there.
Yeah. You know, other people, I'm sure, will have some sort of Cam Newton play, some sort of run or whatever. But the one play that sticks out in my mind just shows the ineptitude of this year's offense was there was a key third down before halftime against the Texans where they called for – basically, Ryan Izzo was setting a pick for James White, and Wizzo.
That's Izzo what he completely, is.
Izzo completely whiffed on the play. James White got tackled 1 yard short of the first down. They had to punt. Instead, if Izzo makes the block there, White probably runs forever. They score. They probably go on and win that game and stay in the playoff race. Instead, it was a complete disaster. They had to punt. The Texans come back and score before halftime, and it was just a debacle after that.
I mean, to me, it was I go all the way back to week two in that goal line play against Seattle. That was atrocious. That was absolutely atrocious. They had run the same play just a little before. They telegraphed the whole thing, and it was a foreshadowing of how afraid they were to throw the ball down in the red zone.
I got with a dumb onside kick in Buffalo against the Bills. After they scored, they had some momentum, and Bill gives it all away.
Great one, Murray. All right, what was the, on that along those lines, Coach? So add that to this following list. What was the worst Belichick coaching decision, or Josh McDaniel, or whatever, the worst coaching decision from the team this year? Onside kick on the list. What else is on the list?
For me, it was the defensive approach at Miami a couple of weeks ago, where they thought they were still in it, and Tua was quarterback. They had none of their weapons. They had no running game. The Patriots played like they were the greatest offense ever. Two defensive linemen got trucked all over the place running the ball, and including they didn't even make any adjustments in the second half. It was an embarrassing approach, and it was an embarrassing defensive coaching performance.
So you guys are going to have to help me. I always get the games wrong. But was it the Rams game when they were down at the goal line and ran it every time?
Yep.
That sequence to me was horrible. Horrible. That one to me was like the worst demonstration of coaching I've ever seen from the Patriots.
And I go with how they handle Chase Winovich. Do you trust this kid or not? I mean, he'll give up the occasional big running play, and then his ass is on the bench for a series of plays. And then when he comes back out, like, he'll make plays. And then there was that stretch there for a couple of games where he didn't really even play at all. Do you trust the kid or not?
Okay, I go back to the Rams. That sequence inside the 5-yard line. Oh, they ran it four times, two to Harris, two on Cam Newton, not even close on any of those attempts, completely telegraphed. Game was still in the balance, and their season was still in the balance. You know, not that we knew it at the time that they needed 10, 11 wins, but it was still ostensibly in the balance at that time, and that was atrocious, but there's so much on the list. How about Bill not calling for the review against, was it Denver? What was a game where there was, or was it, I think it was Denver, where James White clearly picked up a first down on a swing pass and Bill wouldn't throw the flag on that one. I mean, there's a bunch of them you can go back and look at and go, what were you guys? They butchered a bunch of clock and challenge situations. So maybe Ernie had a really bad year and why Bill, you know, chucked the phone there finally in that Bills game. You know, there was a bunch of them this year where you looked at who's looking at the clock. You know, we blamed Brian Hoyer at the time, but they had a bunch of bad reviews, a bunch of bad clock situations. And then, you know, in those goal to go situations, the one with the Rams was the absolute worst. All right. I promise.
Too many guys on the field, not enough guys on the field. What the hell's going on?
Long list for the highest paid coach in football by far.
Oh, yeah, and remember, it was one of his best coaching jobs ever.
Okay. All right, so I promise, back to your phones right after these words.
Boston's home for sports. Filger and Mads, 98.5 The Sports Hub. You listen sometimes because you agree.
I agree with Mads.
And sometimes because deep down, you like the pain.
Pulling each other's shirts off and licking each other's faces.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Looks like Bill said go for it with Josh, though.
In a 17-0 game,
yep.
Patriots keep the offense on the field.
Oh, boy. I give him run-pass option. Don't do a sneak here. Get him outside. Run, throw first. Run second. Give him a chance.
Harris
don't go between tackles.
Harris has gone back in to deflect Newton in the pony formation with White. from the quarterback's right now to move in motion left slot. It's a snap to Newton. He's going to look to pitch it. Has nowhere to go. He is brought down in the backfield.
Terrible
tackle
call.
Made by Justin Hollins. And Cam Newton dropped for a loss back at the four. Patriots turned away empty-handed.
That's what you don't do.
So there's the play we were talking about. Goal line against the Rams. Back to the phones, as promised, Greg Bedard alongside Michael in Hanover. What do you got, Michael?
Hey, guys. So in regards to the whole salary dispute, quarterback versus head coach, you should ask this question. In regards to Tom Brady, he, in any season that he's played, he's never missed the playoffs. In the 1 year he didn't play with the Patriots' injury, they missed. Granted, they went 11-5, but Bill didn't make it with Castle. And now his first year without Brady, he goes 7-9, doesn't make it. Meanwhile, Bucks last year were 7-9. Brady takes them into an 11-5 and makes it. So is he worth the money to if it guarantees the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to look at it, but I think it's the wrong way. Here's the right way. So I think we could all say coming off of this year, Bill's not worth $20 to $25 million. Let's say Bill's an unrestricted free agent and he was out there for any team to sign. You think there's a team out there would pay him $20 million a year to come in and take over their program?
Yes.
Yes.
So
no question there would be. Absolutely. Now, look, that being said, if you were to say to me, would I do it? My answer would be, I don't know. I have doubts about Bill now. I do. And my concern really has to do with the team building aspect. I still think Bill can coach. I'm not delusional about that. But if I'm looking to build an operation, is Belichick the guy I want doing it? I'm not sure. He's had a lot of bad drafts in a row.
Mark in the car. He's up next with Felger, Maz, and Greg Bedard. Hi, Mark.
Hi, guys. How you doing? Well, so I had a question. If Tooney, and I know the big boy, I think he's great too, but if he's that great an offensive lineman, have they, and when he was coming up, have they thought about, and I haven't heard this, trading Shaq Mason and using that money to sign Tooney?
Okay.
Does that even come up, or is that even an option?
Okay, Greg, your thoughts on the whole guard money situation?
I haven't looked at, I'm trying to find Shaq's contract.
It's $10 million a year. He's like their fifth highest paid player, something like that.
Yeah, they had almost $25 million committed to guards.
So if they trade, even if they trade him next year, it's going to be some sort of a cap hit. There's going to be some dead cap. It's not going to be, you're not going to get a net cap savings.
Okay, but, I mean, they got tons of room and not that it's an issue anyway, right? I mean, that shouldn't be. I mean, we're talking about the real cap, the real cash money cap, given the coach's salary and all of that, Greg. So, I mean, you tell me. Well, I mean, I know you have a take on Tooney as it is and what they paid him this year and how they handled that whole situation. What's that thought?
So, yeah, my thought on that is I want to know what their plans are with Tooney because, you know, let's play this out for a second. So they tagged him at basically $15 million. Which was basically between that and Devin McCourty's extension was the extent of their petty cash at the time. Because the Patriots actually had about $30 million in cap space at the start of free agency. And $20 million of it evaporated right there, and then they basically didn't have any. They made a few minor signings, and then it was gone. So the Patriots, their choice this past offseason was tag Tooney, let him go, get the third round comp pick for this coming draft and use that money to, you probably could have gotten Marcus Mariota, probably a tight end with that money. Instead, they decided not to do that. They brought him back. Now what are they going to do? Like if he signs elsewhere and if the Patriots are aggressive in free agency, that can't, the signings cancel each other out. They get no comp picks for Joe Tooney in 2022. So what are they doing? Because if they don't sign him to an extension, if they don't keep him, that was a complete waste of money. They could have just let him go and banked the money. They could have used the money or banked it even more, another $15 million for next year. Right now, it looks like they're going to get nothing for $15 million investment.
To use the quarterback money on a guard, I mean, I'm sorry. I know Tooney's a good player, Greg.
I'm glad this came up. No, go ahead.
You know, and I believe in a good offensive line. You know, I don't believe in paying running backs, but I do believe in paying offensive linemen. So I'm not like anti-offensive line. That's just a precursor to saying it is stupid to spend $15 million on a franchise tag for a guard and have the cheapest quarterback in the league. Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. So look, I'm glad this came up because, again, we said this way back at the beginning of the year, $25 million almost to two guards. 20. And meanwhile, another 25 for the coach. So that's $50 million to two guards and a coach, and you don't have a quarterback? Because we talked about this at the beginning of the season. That is a gross mismanagement of assets. And I'm talking about cash. Not only gross.
Not only that, but they had drafted Froholt, I think, in the fourth round. He's gone. That's a complete waste. You drafted a kid in the sixth round this year who could have easily started all season at left guard, and you could have gotten representative play at that position, if not, you know, pretty close to what Tooney does. If they don't make this work with Tooney and say maybe sign him and get rid of Mason or something, because Andrews is also up, that's just, it's completely botched.
I mean, completely. That is a upside down roster, man. To be paying your quarterback what you're paying him and the guards what you're paying them. And next year, Greg, just so you know, he's got a schedule for a $10 million cap hit, but it's only around six if they cut him, and it's under three if they cut him after June 1.
I just clarify one thing Greg said? I want to make sure I heard this right. If they don't franchise Tooney and he leaves via free agency, they get nothing?
Well, if say they sign a wide receiver or
it washes is what
he's saying. Oh, okay, I gotcha.
It washes out. It cancels each other out.
Gotcha. So, I just think that's I think it's an asinine way to deploy your assets. To spend that much at guard. The coach is a whole different conversation. And you know, thank God we have this information, man. So, like Belichick's salary. Do you know what the kind of takes that opens up? Like, look at what you just did. You know, we're ripping them for what we did at guard. And if you just tack on Bill's salary to the guard salary, now it's not 25, it's suddenly 50. And it's like, what are you doing? And now we can tack, like, Bill's like an add-on to anything we want to rip them for. And then you add Bill's salary, it's like it opens up a whole new door of things to rip them over.
No. Not a door. Not a door. A highway is what it opens up. I'm talking the Autobahn, for crying out loud, when it comes to an avenue it takes. When I heard this yesterday, when it happened, when it popped up on the show yesterday, I went, oh my. Like, I said, you know what this is? This is programming right up to opening day.
All right, and we'll continue with it right after Big Jim Murray's update. There's no commercials here, so don't go anywhere.
Life can be complicated, especially with all the new challenges we face today and the uncertainty of tomorrow. One thing you shouldn't have to worry about is your auto, home, or business insurance. That's why Hub New England makes it simple. The best coverage for the best price. As the largest insurance broker in Massachusetts, Hub New England works with Safety Insurance and makes it simple to provide the best protection by evaluating your needs and then matching you with the right coverage. Hub New England. Ready for tomorrow. Learn more at hubinternational.com.